It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. It's the final Money Matters before the 2020 election. This is our last time to chat together live before Tuesday. We've been talking about this for a year, well over a year, and it's here. And of course, what did the market do this week? Worst week since peak fear during the pandemic in March. And that was the week leading up to the presidential election, which clearly sends this signal that the market, investors are worried about something, and you can really take your pick. First of all, looking like a closer and closer election. Number one, what does that mean? Well, it means less certainty that on Wednesday morning you'll wake up and say, oh, here's what the House looks like. Here's what the Senate looks like. Here's who's going to live in the White House over the next 4 years. COVID cases surge. What does that do? Does that mean more economic shutdowns, lockdowns? We've seen it in Europe. We've seen it in the United Kingdom over the weekend. Does that happen here in the United States? And I was out last night with the kids doing just regular trick-or-treating, just normal, regular trick-or-treating that really felt, in some respect, it felt really abnormal because a lot of neighborhoods in the Atlanta metro do a wonderful job of shutting down a couple streets and having everybody flood the streets, parents and children walk around, the parents chit-chat, hang out, have a beer or two, the kids go and they ravage these homes for candy, and they come back with, you know, a satchel of sugar. And yesterday was very different than that. It was a few kids, not a lot of parents, in the light. Nobody stayed out really past dark, and it was just a very different vibe. But there was this anticipation from parents that, and by the way, the kids made out like bandits because houses were prepared, but not a lot of kids were out. So I have a photo of my four-year-old. His bag of candy was so heavy that he was dragging it down a pair of stairs as if it were a bag of cement. Thump, one stair. Thump, two stairs. Dad, it's so heavy. Can you carry this for me? I said, Samuel, look, buddy. You got that much candy, you're gonna have to muscle it home. But the prevailing thought was, wow, I can't wait until next year. Can't wait until 2021. Halloween 2021. Can you imagine? Can you imagine what Halloween 2021 is going to look like? Now, to some extent, it doesn't matter what happens on Tuesday. 2021 Halloween is going to be a blowout because the world's going to be a lot closer back to normal. And that is a prevailing thought for 2021. That same sentiment is that I can't wait to get back out and get back to a more normal life. Imagine what that will do to the 2021 economy. By the way, that's a good thing I'm talking about. I'm talking about all of this pent-up demand and pent-up savings that we have in America that all of our economic data points to that will show an unleashing of economic activity next year despite all the fear and the worry that we're experiencing as of today, right now. So this week, the market down, 6.5% for the Dow, the NASDAQ down almost 6%, S&P down 5.5%. I mean, this is a terrible week for stocks. It's a terrible week. And the culprit, you say, is it COVID? Is it the election? Is it the economics? No, the culprit is the same thing it always is. Every time we get a sell-off like this, and a big sell-off like this, it's fear. It's fear and uncertainty. That's what it is every time. And fear and uncertainty is a way of sweep. What does it do? It sweeps money under the mattress. It is this, and there's a lot of it. Fear and uncertainty is what stashes money away underneath the mattress, which means it doesn't get invested. And I get it. I understand. I understand the fear of today. But I think the operative word here is today. And I want to talk to you about these two different words. The word today and the word tomorrow, and then the word good, and the word great. That's what we're talking about here on this final Money Matters as we lead up into the election. pre-election Money Matters. Next Sunday will be a post-election Money Matters. So there are some investors, by the way, there's some investors in this market that are actually investing for today, literally for the day. They wake up Monday morning, they do trades, they are trading their book of business and their investments for that day. They're going to close everything out that night. For the day, for the week, for the month, right? Short-term traders. They are called traders. And there are scores of them. And there's nothing wrong. By the way, there's nothing wrong with them. I'm not scorning the traders. That is a part of the marketplace. Quite frankly, it's an important part of the marketplace. Helps give lots of liquidity and price discovery to both sides because there's a lot of activity in any given nanosecond on Wall Street. And there's lots of them. They're all over the United States, really all over the world. And these are the folks that control the day-to-day moves in this market that we see, just like this week. When the moves get really pronounced, by the way, and we're starting to see that in this one week as an example, another week or two of that, and what is going to happen? Well, the traders are going to have a gravitational pull on even the investors. Even investors will get caught up in the trading. Investors, they can jump on the bandwagon and help either bubbles that are blowing up or exacerbating declines. Speed and severity. The traders start it, and they're always whispering to the investors to come on in, join the party. And that's exactly what we saw this week. Traders, they trade for today. And then there are investors, and I would suspect that a lot of us out there, a lot of you listening, are probably more investors versus traders. I'm more of an investor, not a trader. Investors are investing for, not today, they're investing for tomorrow. So tomorrow, when I say tomorrow, I'm not talking about tomorrow like it is in Monday or Tuesday or the next 5 days. I mean the next 5 years and 10 years and 20 years. And I'm a tomorrow investor. Not a today investor, and thank God. If you think about investing long run is tough? You think investing for the long run is difficult? Try investing for the day, which I think would be nearly impossible. And the stress of doing that literally can kill you. The stress of that is very real. The stress of that can kill you. So fortunately, you and I, or most of you listening, have the what I think is the real advantage. The real advantage of investing for tomorrow, which is the long, long, long run. Thank goodness. And this is one of those times that we have to be vigilant about our focus on tomorrow. We've got to look at the future and not this week. So regardless of the stimulus package, timing or size, when are we going to get it? If we're going to get it, what's the size of the package? It's going to be 2 million, 2 trillion, 3 trillion. Regardless of the COVID pandemic, which by the way, we're already 9 months in. Regardless of how many more months this lasts, regardless of who wins on November 3rd, or again, we don't even know. Maybe it's not the 3rd, maybe it's the 4th or the 5th. We don't even know when things are going to get called for this election, because we know, though, that when we add up all those pieces, tomorrow will be one of two things. And obviously tomorrow, I'm talking about the future. Tomorrow is going to be one of two things. At least here in America, it's going to be one of two things. And that is either, and this is the second set of words I wanted to get to today, tomorrow will either be good or it'll be great. That's it. There's a multiple choice test. Hey, what is tomorrow going to look like in America? There's really only two choices. It's either going to be good or it's going to be great. Maybe there's a third answer. There's A, B, and C. C is all of the above. Tomorrow, which is the long run, will only be one of two things. It will either be good or it will be great here in this country. So now, quick reminder about stocks and the election in case you missed last week. Because last week we did everything about, it was all about the election. It was Election Watch 2020. I'm not going to spend a ton of time on this, but I want to do a quick review on this. And if you missed it, of course, you can go back and listen to the podcast from last week where we spent an entire hour or 2 hours on the political combinations in the White House and Congress, what's good or bad for stocks. And as a really quick review, remember that regardless of the political combination that we find ourselves in on November 4th, the outcome for investors is one of two things. And when I say political combinations, I mean Republican win, Democrat win, Congress goes Senate, or Congress goes Democrat or Republican, the Senate goes Democrat. I'm talking about political combinations that we can end up with in Washington. It's either any of those combinations you can think of, they're either good for the market or they are great for the market. It's just one of those two. It's not, and I think what we inherently think, depending on whatever team you're rooting for, we think, well, hey, if it's not the Republicans, if it's not 15% positive, or it's 15% positive the Republicans win, or it's negative 15% of the Democrats win, or vice versa, I know it might feel that way. Like, oh, if my party doesn't win, if my party wins, the market's going to go through the roof. If my party loses, the market's going to be terrible. You might feel that way, and I totally get that, because I don't want higher taxes, and I don't want more regulation. I very much hope that's not the case, because it just makes for a steeper climb in an already tough economy. And I really don't want those things. I've been advocating for them all year. But I'm here to remind you that what did we talk about last week? The Army of American Productivity, that's the 150 million people that wake up every day and try to feed their family and put food on their plates. That's the same army of productivity that drives earnings for the great companies in America. And by the way, that trumps all of it. Trumps everything. And that's why you end up with either really only two choices about tomorrow. It's either good or it's great. Now, the political outcomes very quickly were, if you get, and this is going back into almost 100 years of political combinations over the course of history in America, and what did the market do underneath that combination or alongside that combination? A blue wave, which is a possibility, which means the House would stay Democrat, the Senate goes Democrat, and Biden wins. A blue wave, average annual return for stocks is still 9.3%. A Democratic president with a split Congress, by the way, meaning you have Republican and Democrat, House, Senate, that's a 13.5% rate of return on average per year. And then if you have a Republican in with a split Congress, that's almost a 9% per year combination. The only combination that isn't great is the one that is so totally unlikely, which is a Republican president and a full Democrat House and Senate, which we know that is really not even on the table. That's very unlikely. That's still almost 5% per year. So the outcomes are either really good or they're quite frankly great. And that's why the multiple choice test is pretty easy right here. The answer is C, all of the above. You're listening to Money Matters. We're going to come right back. We've got more about today versus tomorrow, good versus great, and then an example at the bottom of the half hour, probably the best example I've come up with in a decade to understand the difference between high-flying, sexy stocks versus old, boring companies that actually make money. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here. It is Sunday morning. The Money Matters right before the election. And I was thinking about this week on Eric Von Hessler as a guest, which I'm typically a guest almost most mornings on the Von Hessler Doctrine, which is a lot of fun. And talking about the COVID economy. And obviously, politics is a huge topic right now. But I just think about the thought that how the Biden camp has been saying it's going to be a dark winter. Going to be a dark winter. Now, here I am talking about on Sunday mornings. I just thought of this as we came back onto the air. I'm talking about the multiple choice test that says good or great or all of the above. You know, the Biden camp, or at least those running the campaign trying to scare most of America, they'd be like, wait a minute. I don't see, where's the dark winter option? Good. Okay. No. Great. No. Dark winter. Yeah. That's the one. That's what that camp is. And that's just the season of the day, right? That is anytime you get an election, and this is arguably the most heavily contested election in the history of our lifetime, You got one side that's just that literally saying it's going to be a long, dark winter. That is not the way I see it, folks. That is not the way I see it. And even if you get a... Now, and I want to reassure you how the world would be okay, no matter what happens politically, I have a chart in front of me with a red line and a blue line and a dotted blue line, and it talks about what happens if the incumbent loses to the market in kind of the shorter term. Here I go again, talking about today, when what we need to really worry about is tomorrow, but we'll at least touch on it when we get back, because this is Money Matters right before the November 3rd election. And that's exactly what we'll do. Plus an example of which bucket of companies would you rather own? I can't wait to give you these two examples when Money Matters returns. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. We have so much to cover in this next half hour. We're going to get right to it. Two topics. One's going to be quick, and then I'm going to get to this really important example of which basket would you choose if you could buy basket one with these four stocks in it versus basket two with these seven stocks. Which would you buy? I'm going to get to them one second. But let me go back to one more thought about the election. We already know that regardless of the political combination, Democrat, Republican, the outcomes for the market over the course of history in 100 years are either they're either good or they're great. Those are the two outcomes as far as market returns. Kind of the worst case scenario combination that we could see in this particular election averages about almost 9% a year. Best case scenario, 13.5% a year. Okay, let's move on from that. What about the election time period itself? Not talking about the longer run here. I'm talking about the 6 months and the year right after the election. So here it is. The market, first of all, likes incumbents. The market likes incumbents in the election year. We're in that election. 2020 is an election year. On average, plus 16% on average if the GOP incumbent wins. I'm talking about, and this is over 100 years of market history. I'm talking about the year we're in today. This is the election year. And if the Democratic incumbent wins, it's a plus 6%. So either way, in the election year, the market likes the incumbent. But if the GOP incumbent loses, we do see a sell-off. We do see a sell-off, 10 to 12% on average over the course of history, because the market says, wait a minute, we don't want something new. It takes a while to adjust. What are they going to do? What's policy going to be? Market's down 10 to 12%. By the way, if you're thinking, oh, wait a minute, guess what? The market's already down about an almost 9% right now with the sell-off we've just had. Now, so if I look in this chart I'm looking at here, it's really, there's a bunch of different lines, but I'm going to explain it. GOP incumbent loss down 10 to 12% in the election year. Market's already almost down that much. But the year after, if the GOP incumbent loses, interestingly, the next year, market's actually very strong, positive 12% on average, as the market kind of acclimates to the new party. Now, if the Republican incumbent wins the year after the election, which would be next year, 2021, the market is up on average about 6%. But if the GOP market, again, if the incumbent loses, ironically, over the course of history, the market does even better. Market's up 12%. Again, I'm going back to the same theme. The outlook, the way I see this over the course of history, is either good or it's great. So I just want us to remember two things. Today versus tomorrow. Most of you listening today, most of our audience is a tomorrow investor. And you, whether you are or not, it doesn't matter. I'm not judging either way. It's just, you know what camp you're in. And remember, good versus great. And both of those camps are fine with me. Now, totally switching topics to round out Money Matters here today. We also know, and I'm talking about as an investor, your experience this year. If you owned all NASDAQ and you owned the FANG companies, you've had a great year. Lots of volatility, but ultimately a great year. And if you've owned, let's say, more traditional, durable, dividend-paying companies, the returns or the price returns have been less than stellar. Not awful, but we know, and I've talked about this here on the show multiple times, the market is extraordinarily top heavy, very top heavy. I can't think of a better example. Picture an upside down giraffe for a minute. That's how top heavy this market is. Imagine that analogy. Imagine how top heavy a giraffe would be standing on its head. That's how top heavy this market is. 5 to 8 stocks so large that they dominate the entire movement of the market. And you know what those are. Facebook and Alphabet and Amazon and Netflix. You know those names. And then you got other high flyers that are built for COVID, built for the COVID economy. They're better in a COVID economy, which would be stocks like Zoom and things like Spotify and Shopify and all the FIs. Those are built for people staying at home, not going anywhere. No commerce. Hey, we're built for this. And I got this idea from Chris Davis, who is a great value investor, decades and decades at the Davis Funds. And this is a newsletter that he sent out over the summer or a study they did in the summer. And it gave me the idea to do something similar. And I think this might resonate with anyone that's frustrated by owning, let's call it, the wonderfully durable, enduring, profitable businesses, perennial dividend payers that have stock prices that have lagged this year, just this year. The thought here, though, in this exercise that I'm about to go through with you is to distinguish between real value in companies and price. Two very, very different things. Price is what you pay. Value is what you get. So here's the task. Imagine the following. You have to buy a handful of companies. And here's what's different about this in the way of thinking. An investment is so much about framing how you think about investing. Imagine you had to buy a handful of companies outright. The whole thing. I'm not talking about you get to buy some shares up here and shares. No, you get to own only a couple of companies. You have to buy them outright, the whole thing. So now we have to look at market cap to do that. If you had $100 billion, and again, obviously hypothetical, but if you had $100 billion, you had to spend it, you get to choose, let's say, one company for $100 billion. You have to spend the whole thing. Or you get two companies for $550 billion each, but you have to spend the whole thing by whole companies. So if you think about it this way, you think about buying the company and what the company, the value of the company, versus just the stock, which is very much about, hey, what's the price today? So here's the example. You have $350 billion. And I chose this just because we have to spend the same amount of money in two very different ways. Bucket one and bucket two. Two baskets of companies. They both have to add up to $350 billion. You have to spend it. Which bucket would you want to own for the next 10 years? Again, thinking about being a tomorrow investor. So bucket one, here's bucket one. And again, remember, I just always have to give the compliance disclosure here. And I've even gotten feedback. Well, some shows tell you what, you should buy this or that. I don't know. Our show, we're not allowed to do that. I'm just giving you these as examples. I'm not telling you run out and buy these or don't buy these. I'm just giving you examples. But here's bucket one, Raytheon. What do they do? I don't know. Juggernaut defense company. And by the way, do you want to own a defense company in a world that's not getting any more safe? It's getting no more peaceful. How about Wells Fargo? And by the way, I can't say I love this company. I use Wells Fargo for some of my banking. I don't even love the company, but it is highly profitable and I would say highly enduring. And they just had a bad quarter. It was a bad quarter for Wells Fargo and they earned over $9 billion. American Express, Quest, the healthcare company, Quest Diagnostics, kind of an important company right now in the world we live in. Capital One, Carrier, by the way, HVAC. And Bank of New York Mellon. By the way, Bank of New York Mellon is the largest custodial bank in America. They have $1.9 trillion under management and $37 trillion. $37 trillion when you look at assets under custody. And these are massive companies. And by the way, for that $350 billion, you could buy all seven of them outright. The whole things. Now, what would you get for that? You take your $350 billion, you could buy the whole company, all seven of them. And what would you get for that? You're stuck with them now for a decade. You get about $300 billion a year in revenue. It's about $308 billion, actually. over $300 billion in annual revenue. That's the sales. You generate over $45 billion a year in net after-tax earnings. $45 billion every year. By the way, it's about a 12% earnings yield if you want to look at it that way too. $45 billion on $350 that you invested. It's pretty good. It's really good. How worried are you that that group that you now have to hold on to, that's, by the way, already been in business for decades and in some cases over a century, how worried are you that they won't still be churning out profits over the next 5 years or 10 years? I'll let you answer that question. How worried would you be? Now, here's basket two. Here's basket two. Again, you're $350 billion. You got to buy a handful of companies, and you buy this group. You get to buy Zoom, which, by the way, I cannot wait to stop using. Shopify, by the way, I don't mind Zoom, and I think it is good. It's a nice compromise. But again, wouldn't it be nice if we lived in a world where face-to-face is no big deal anymore, right? Zoom, which I can't wait to stop using. Shopify, Spotify, and I want to say Squarify, but it's not Squarify, it's Square. All right, we're going to look at that. Those four add up to $350 billion. So for your $350, you get to buy all four of those companies and you get to own them outright. What do you get? What's your revenue? Well, you get $14 billion a year in revenue. Well, that sounds pretty good. Wait a minute, what was the other basket paying? $308 billion. So you get $14 billion in revenue versus $300. And you actually get a group of companies that's operating at a net loss. Those companies collectively are losing money. So you get zero profit. So you get zero cash flow out of that bucket. It's actually costing you $200 million per year collectively. What was the other bucket paying? Over $45 billion in profits. Bucket two, with Spotify and Square and Shopify and Zoom, you're losing $200 million a year. Now, that's a more exciting bucket, though. I get it. And that's what makes investing so interesting, is that this second bucket, Zoom, yeah, it's exciting. Spotify, I guess it's exciting. Maybe some people think it's exciting. More exciting than a $37 trillion custodian, or maybe more exciting than an HVAC company that makes air conditioning units. I get it. Yeah, one's kind of cool and one's not. So you've got this exciting group that makes Shopify do? They make online shopping baskets easy. Okay, that's important in the world we live in. I get it. But for my money, by the way, it doesn't seem like a high barrier to entry to me in that. But again, we're not judging these companies so much as to say, to give you two examples of very different profiles, very different ways of investing. But for my money, you know what basket I'm going with. I'm going with boring basket one. Boring basket one. Durable, profitable, massive revenue, massive profits, but their valuations and their prices have been really depressed relative to sexy basket number two. But which one would you feel more comfortable owning for the next 10 years? I think you're getting my message here, though, at this point. You've got two very different ways to invest. One way has kind of shined this year because of an economy and an environment that is built for staying at home and not going anywhere. The market itself is kind of looking at this environment saying, well, this is the way it's always going to be forever. And these are the companies that are going to always have a tailwind. That structural advantage, I don't think it's going to last forever, but markets are kind of thinking it's going to last forever. I doubt it. I'd be very careful with that line of thought. So we'll wrap up when we get back, but think about which ones do you want to own? Well, one is the high flying sexy basket of the day that's done pretty well. And one is a group of what I would consider really valuable companies that actually make money, churn out massive profits, and have a great long-term outlook. But their prices are depressed. Remember, price is what you pay. Value is what you get. More Money Matters straight ahead. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here. It's Sunday morning, the Sunday pre-election. So many people have already voted, 92 million Americans. It makes me think that the lines really probably won't even be that bad on Tuesday. Maybe they will be, but I would think that with that many people have already voted, I would suspect that it is possible that the lines aren't terribly long. We'll see. I just know so many more folks that have, and again, in Georgia, voting early used not to be that big of a deal. And now I don't know anybody that hasn't already voted, including me, including my wife. We've already voted. So anyway, good morning. I think that if you've just tuning back in, or you could, of course, listen to the podcast where I went through a couple really important examples. One, we're talking about politics and what that does to markets and election year. What happens if the incumbent loses or wins? What happens with different political combinations? Very important to understand. And then this concept of today investors versus tomorrow investors. Most of us should be tomorrow investors because we're not in the world of actively trading on a given day. And the outcomes in the United States, as tough as it might feel right now, the outcomes, the way I look at this in the army of American productivity, creates an environment where the future of this economy is one of two things. It's either good or it's great. That's it. That's a multiple choice test I get. That's how I see. And really, to be an investor, if you don't feel that way, then you really should don't want to be investing anyway. You may want to just own. You may want to put money under the mattress. That's okay. That's totally okay. So for investors, you've got to have that conviction that collectively and incrementally, things will get better and better and better over time. Doesn't mean it's going to be a straight line or an escalator higher. It's just that over time, we get better as an economy. The basket examples that I just went through, and this is another challenge that investors have faced this year. There's a high-flying group of technology companies that's done really well under this COVID environment. And you get a lot of more traditional, really profitable companies that create tons of value and profit that haven't really gotten a whole lot of attention or gotten shunned because they're not not in the jet stream of what the COVID economy is looking for. I don't think that lasts forever, but two very different baskets of companies or ways to invest. You could almost look at that example that I've given here today would be the example of being a value investor and a growth investor. So if you look at it from the angle that I looked at it, one is kind of this high-flying, sexy basket versus one, those more traditional, really profitable companies. If you look at it from that angle, if you've got to own these whole companies, which one do you want to own over the next decade or so? And I certainly choose basket one, the more value-oriented basket. And I think you know the answer for yourself as well, right? So the prices of Spotify and Shopify and Square have gone through the roof. But does it make sense from a value perspective? Value versus price. And remember, the next time you're tempted to ditch grinding higher profits for glitz and glam, just be careful about that. Have a wonderful week. I'll talk with you. I'll be on the Von Hessler Doctrine talking about this COVID economy and the election throughout this upcoming week. It's anywhere from 9 to noon here on WSB. Stay tuned to the best programming on the planet, right here, 95.5 WSB, Atlanta's news and talk.